This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Alex Chadwick. Over the last couple of days, two attorneys have been letting us listen in as they counsel 11 detainees in the war on terror held at Guantanamo Bay. They're challenging these detentions in U.S. federal courts. The attorneys are some of the detainees' only connection to the world outside Guantanamo. And as we'll hear today, sometimes they find themselves responsible for much more than their clients' legal cases. In this final report by Marianne McCune of member station WNYC, the lawyers visit two more families in Yemen.
This is Sarah and Doug. We're in the car.
Sarah Havens and Doug Cox are bringing their mic and recorder south from Yemen's capital to Taiz, where they're hoping to meet a father they've had a hard time tracking down.
It's about 4 hours through mountains.
His son is a detainee named Riyad Attak Al-Haj, a young man Cox says he's grown close to during his visits to Guantanamo.
Riyad is extremely gentle.
All the prisoners in Guantanamo have been through some pretty awful things. But with Riyad, it just makes him very quiet and shy and a little bit nervous about talking to people.
He does not want us to go into detail about the things that have happened to him and about his story, and the reason for that is he says that it's his obligation to forgive those who have done things to him.
A record of the military's review of Riyad Al-Haj says he carried a Kalashnikov rifle on the front lines with the Taliban. But the record says Al-Haj claims he was working in an Afghan hospital. Cox and Haven say interrogators at Guantanamo were extremely rough with him for many months. And they suspect the military has mistaken him for another man.
Apparently he said that somebody with the same name or similar name as him showed up in Guantanamo and then it stopped. So he thinks that they really did have him confused with someone else.
When Cox and Havens get to the city of Taiz, they're eager to find his father's home.
The electricity in Yemen goes out all the time, and the neighborhood in which Riyad's father lives is incredibly poor, so the streets are just filled with essentially rubble. So you're climbing up dark alleys filled with stones.
When they finally make it to the right house, it's dark, and it turns out Al-Haj's father is not there. He's gone to the capital, where they have just come from. They'll have to try to find him on their return to Sana'a. Meanwhile, they turn their attention to the family of another detainee, Ahmad Abdullah Hassan.
Could you tell us your name?
Hassan's family has driven from 2 hours away to meet with the attorneys, and they've brought with them a local government representative.
My name is Fadl Awad Saleh, and I was a teacher of Ahmad. I know his father, I know his brother, I know all the family.
Records of Ahmad Abdullah Hassan's review by military officials say he was captured at a university dorm in Pakistan while studying religion, but that he's a member of Al-Qaeda and traveled to Afghanistan to participate in jihad. The military says he told interrogators he would follow a fatwa that declared jihad and would not question his leader. The statement says he recalls telling them, "I don't follow any specific person because I, Ahmad Abdullah, have my own ideas and philosophy."
Every time I go see him, we end up having really intense philosophical debates about what it means to be somebody's lawyer and, you know, why should I be having a benefit personally when there are other people who want lawyers and can't have them. I had a long conversation with him once where I convinced him by going back to the free rider theory in economics, saying, you know, we lawyers as a group get benefits for the detainees as a group, which he found to be quite persuasive. So, and then he subsequently asked for a book on the free rider theory in economics.
Ahmad Abdullah Hassan's family and teacher seem to have little idea why he left Yemen in the first place.
We were surprised by this decision to go out of Yemen, out of his family and out of his country.
There are a lot of reasons why people went to Afghanistan or why they went to Pakistan, and some of those had to do with job-related reasons. Some of them were going to find a wife. Some of them were having bad relationships with their parents, perhaps.
For Ahmad, it will be an important lesson for him because he can come back to his family. His family also capable to give him the tenderness that he needs. And he will not participate in any problems in society.
Cox and Havens learn a few weeks later that Ahmad Hassan has gone on a hunger strike to protest indefinite detention. The last they heard, he's being force-fed in a Guantanamo Bay hospital bed. Hassan has given his attorneys his will.
This is Sarah and Doug in the car from Taiz to Sana'a.
The attorneys return to their hotel in the capital. And on their last workday before heading back to New York, they're meeting with a few last family members in the lobby of their hotel when a man appears who resembles the father of detainee Riyad Attaq al-Hajj, the one they couldn't find in Taiz.
All of a sudden, I saw Doug bolt out of his chair and run over to this tiny, tiny little old man hobbling through the lobby of this, you know, very posh Western-style hotel.
I said, "You're Abu Riyad, you're the father of Riyad, right?" And he said, "Yes." And he's almost nearly blind.
And the minute this poor man sat down with us, he just burst into tears.
They told them that your son is blind now.
He had heard that Riyad had had his legs cut off and his arms were broken and that they had put electricity in his ears and all these horrific things had occurred to him and he didn't even know if he was living.
He hears fine, he sees fine.
We told him that, in fact, we saw him 2 weeks ago and we talked to him and he's fine and he laughs and he smiles and he's in good health.
You could see the relief just pouring out of him, and he was sobbing throughout the entire conversation. He also said that Doug was like his son to him, and he trusted Doug to look after Riyad as if Riyad was in turn his son.
How do you live up to that, or how do you do that?
It's a lot of responsibility.
Before Cox and Havens return to New York from Yemen, Haven says their translator explains what has happened. When they arrived, they were 90% body and 10% heart. On their departure, the proportions are reversed.
Every time we said goodbye to a family that we had gotten close with in Yemen, and we just saw how much faith and hope that they had in us, to sort of be the sole source of news about their loved one and then be the repository of all their hope that that person is going to come back. And then to get back here and realize that we're up against such an enormous fight, it's really heartbreaking.
A Defense Department spokesman reminds that al-Qaeda members are trained to accuse their captors of abuse and to try to manipulate the American legal system to their advantage. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has said the military doesn't want to hold the detainees any longer than is necessary. Several dozen have been released based on a review of their cases by military officials. At a press conference in June, Rumsfeld said the Pentagon is looking to turn the remaining men over to authorities overseas.
We prefer to return them to their countries of origin if the country is capable and willing to manage them in an appropriate way.
Cox and Havens say a Yemeni official told them four detainees have so far been returned and that they're being held without charges in Yemeni prisons. But in at least one case, families can visit. Cox and Havens are advising their clients that would be a step up from Guantanamo. For NPR News, I'm Marianne McCune.
You can find links to the other stories in this series and follow a timeline of the fight over detainee rights at Guantanamo Bay. Go to npr.org.